So welcome to Bhakti Sangha Japa conference call. Today we are very fortunate to have His Holiness Chandramouli Swami Maharaj to enlighten us on Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 1, and verses 32 and 33. So Hare Krishna Maharaj, please accept my humble obeisances. All goes to Srila Prabhupada, all goes to you Maharaj. So thank you so much for giving your valuable association and time. Now I would like to hand over the call to you Maharaj. Thank you so much, Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna Hare Maharaj, Krishna. You are mute. Yes.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes. Yes, Maharaj.
Yeah, I just noticed something you chanted and I was wondering if you would chant it again. It's the Panchatattva mantra. Could you chant it again for me?
Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advait Gadadhar Shiva Sadi Gaur Bhaktavinda.
Okay. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Maharaj.
It's also called Maha Mantra.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. So we go to the verse, which is... Okay, because these are presented in the prose, there is no meter for chanting the prose. Sometimes we do, when we are in class with devotees, we do the word for word. But I don't know if we can do that word for word online. I guess we can. I'll cite, re-say, and you just respond to my statement. You can all keep yourself on mute and just respond where you are. Jambu. Jambu. Plaksa. Plaksa. Shyamali. Shyamali. Kusa, Kusa, Krunchya, Krunchya, Saka, Saka, Pushkara, Pushkara, Samgya, known as, Tesam, Tesam, of them, Parimanam, measurement, Purvasmat, Purvasmat, from the former, Uttara, Uttara, the following, Yata, according to, Sakyam, number, Dviguna, twice as much, Manena, with a measure, Bahi, outside, Samantataha, all around, Upakliptaha, reduced. Translation, the names of the islands are Jambu, Plaksa, Shyamali, Kusa, Krunchya, Saka, Pushkara. Each island is twice as large as the one preceding it, and each is surrounded by a liquid substance beyond which is the next island. Purport. The ocean in each planetary system has a different type of liquid. How they are situated is explained in the next verse. So we'll go right into the... Keep going. We'll write into the translation. The seven oceans respectively contain salt water, sugarcane juice, liquor, clarified butter, milk, emulsified yogurt, and sweet drinking water. All the islands are surrounded by these oceans, and each ocean is equal in breadth to the island it surrounds. Maharaj Priyarat, the husband of Queen Bahishmati, gave sovereignty over these islands to his respective sons, namely Agnidra, Idmajiva, Yajnabahu, Hiranyareta, Girthaprastha, Medatiti, and Vitihotra. They all became kings by the order of their father. Purport. It is understood that all the dwipas or islands are surrounded by different types of oceans. And is herein that the breadth of each ocean is the same as that of the island it surrounds. The length of the oceans, however, cannot equal the length of the islands. According to Viraragava Acharya, the breadth of each first island is 10,000 yojanas. One yojana equals 8 miles, and therefore the breadth of the first island is calculated to be 800,000 miles. The water surrounding it must have the same breadth, but its length must be different. Om Gyan Timidandasya Ginajana Salakaya Chaksu Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Staptitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadammayam Dadati Swam Padatikam Ma Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shri Bhakti Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gaudavani Pacharine Nirvisesa Sunyavadi Pastyatya Dei Satarine Pancha Kalpa Tarubhischa Kripa Sindhu Pehevacha Patitanam Pavane Vyo Vaishnave Vyo Namaha Namaha Jai Sri Krishna, Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita Gadadhar, Srivasani Gaur Bhakta Vrinda, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, each island is twice as long as the preceding one. So the first one is 800,000 miles. So the next one is 1,600,000 miles, and then double that. So you see that the universe is quite fantastic in the sense that it's unlimitedly big. This is just this universe here. This universe is considered to be the smallest of all the universes in existence, one of the smallest. According to the size of the universe, Lord Brahma has a particular number of heads. So the Brahma in our universe has 4 heads. And then on up as the universes become larger, so then there's even millions of heads of Brahma, where there are universes that are so large, they are immeasurable. And this is Krishna's creation. When you speak about greatness, you don't really say anything. If you say God is great, it doesn't tell you anything. Just like you might say, well, this person here, he did a great job. Or this person is great. Or this person has great qualities. You don't say anything, really. You just give an indication of something. So when you say great, you have to really describe what it means in terms of explanation. So here, this is a little bit about the greatness of Krishna as being the source of all existence, both material and spiritual. He creates these universes that are unlimitedly, just like it says, if you travel at the speed of sound for 40 million years, you may reach the end of the universe. So the speed of sound, I forgot how fast it is. It's very fast. 186,000 miles per second or something like that. So traveling like that for millions of years, you still won't reach the end of the universe. So Krishna is unlimitedly great, but as he says in the Bhagavad Gita in the 10th chapter, at the very end, after describing himself in relationship to what is the great things within creation, you know, he says of Himalaya, of mountains, I am the Himalayas. Of aquatics, I am the shark. So out of all the great things in existence, he's put different, what we say, characteristics into that. You don't have to go into that. You can go to the last verse if you want. Go to the very end. Yeah, of trees, I'm the banyan of sages. I am this. But he says, know that all opulent, beautiful, and glorious creations spring from but a spark of my splendor. What he says in the previous verse, there's no end to my divine manifestations. What I've spoken to is a mere indication of my infinite opulences. And then he ends by saying, what use is all this detailed knowledge, Arjuna? What a single fragment of myself I pervade and support this entire universe. So we get a little idea of how great God is. Of course, we can't really ever understand the greatness of God. In fact, Prabhupada said, even Krishna doesn't know how great he is. In fact, it says that he is always, as everything is unlimited, his greatness is also unlimited. And that means that he's becoming greater and greater. He doesn't stay just one way great. He just continues to become greater and greater and greater. He's not static in his greatness. He's reached the end of his greatness. Now, his greatness is always expanding. So when we speak about God, we speak about something that we have no idea. Just like Lord Brahma said, some people say they know you. And that is very nice. But as far as I'm concerned, I don't know anything about you. So here's Lord Brahma, whose intelligence is much greater than anyone in creation. He has great intelligence. He says, I don't know anything about you. So what do we know? Our existence is so insignificant. And here, we're also describing as something about the greatness of his creation. When this fifth canto came out in publication, it shook even the devotional world. And this is only one of the many things that people couldn't, you know, hear or understand. And Prabhupada put it out, and Prabhupada got a lot of, what we say, challenging, because the common persons are growing up with the scientific understanding of things and still being affected by those misconceptions. When they heard Prabhupada's explanation, which is not Prabhupada's, it's the Srimad Bhagavatam itself. It's coming from pure sources, coming from Krishna himself. We even certain devotees couldn't accept it. There's one humorous story which just shows how devotees were thinking in those days. It was around the time of when the United States is doing all this space travel, and they were sending these rocket ships to the moon. At least they were saying that. And Prabhupada, in 1969, he was in Los Angeles, he got on a radio show. And it was an interview. You can still hear that interview. It's interesting. Prabhupada's talking to the person running the show. And it's a question and answer. And Prabhupada says, they didn't go to the moon. And that was at a time when everybody was saying, oh, this moon landing is so amazing. Just see, they're on the moon. They had all these films of these guys in spaceships kind of floating along on top of the moon's surface. It was some kind of cartoon. But everyone was taking it as some real photos. And Prabhupada said, we never went to the moon. He said, you know, it was simply a ploy by the scientists to draw money from the public. That's all. They spent $5 billion on the space program. So there was one devotee, I won't mention his name. He's no longer practicing Krishna consciousness, at least within our society. But he was sure that we went to the moon. So he would argue with Prabhupada. And Prabhupada would give his answers. But he kept saying, no, no. And then there would be the pictures on television, just see. And Prabhupada said, it's not real. So finally, one day, he was in the kitchen and he was cooking for Prabhupada, I think he was. Yeah. And the ghee caught on fire. The ghee on the stove. And obviously, the flame was too high on the wok. So the ghee started to actually smoke, and then it caught on fire. And then he tried to put it out. And there was all this black smoke. And some of the devotees came to help him. And so he got full of black smoke all over his face and his clothes. And so Prabhupada had heard there was some problem in the kitchen, so he called the devotees. So they came. And this devotee who was he was sure we went to the moon, he came to see Prabhupada, and his face was covered with smoke, black smoke, and his dhoti was all black. So Prabhupada looked at him and said, oh, you went to the moon. So Prabhupada was a little humorous there. He didn't appreciate that so much. But the point is that it sounds from our perspective quite fantastic when we hear these descriptions. But you can use the analogy. It's like you've seen ants. Ants, they're very intelligent. They know how to work together to build a little, you know, an anthill. And if they want to transport food from place to place, they line up and they go in lines. They're really organized ants. People study ants to see how much they work together in an organized fashion. So we could say two ants are talking. One ant is talking to another ant. And one ant says to the other ant, my dear fellow ant, you know, I'm sure there's something up there that's bigger than us. And the other ant looks at him and says, come on, you've been eating too much sugar. So, example, two ants are trying to discuss the fact that there are something above them. They can't perceive it. So in the same way, our ant-like existence here in this material world is very much the same. We are so small and so tiny, and we are trying to understand what is beyond the realm of existence. So the scientists, they're getting their microscopes out, their telescopes, and they're all in their big, big experimentations, and come up with all these theories about what is the universe, what is beyond our, you know, purview of vision. But Prabhupada says their senses are imperfect, and therefore the instruments they make in order to see beyond are also imperfect. So we're always getting from the scientists, we don't get any kind of clear understanding of anything. They're always changing their ideas. Just like there's one scientific theory that was accepted within the scientific realm for 35 years. After 35 years, they had to throw it out because they realized they were mistaken. And it was called the mirrors effect. The mirrors effect was something Einstein told people that it would actually be like that, but the scientists, using their own observation, felt it was something different. So the mirrors effect says that using your telescopes and whatever else, you look up into the cosmos and you see particular, what we say, planets or something floating in this in the cosmological, you know, realm. And you see it, and then you designate it, you describe it, and you locate it. So they were doing that, that this is what we see, and it's located here, this is what we see, it's located here, like that. But after 35 years, they finally accepted Einstein's understanding of what is called the mirrors effect. And that is that when you see an object in a particular place, because of what is called the mirrors effect, is that the object is being reflected by light, and the object is millions of miles from where you actually see it. So after observing many, many, what we say, things floating in the cosmos, they had to throw it all out, all their theories, because they're all wrong. So those of you who know how scientists work, and maybe there's some of scientists out there in our little discussion, they're always changing. And change doesn't mean scientific fact. Prabhupada said science means observation and experimentation. So they can't really experiment because their observations are all based on their imperfect senses and imperfect instruments. But when Prabhupada put out this particular fifth canto, and you'll get more of these hard to understand theories of existence, you'll find that it creates a doubt in the minds of others. Maybe we also have these doubts that this is the actual reality. But there is two types of ways to learn knowledge. One is called Avaroha Panta, and the other one is called Aroha Panta. Avaroha means going up, and Aroha means coming down. So knowledge that comes down from the perfect source is perfect knowledge. And knowledge that is gained by empirical observation using sensual means for experimentation, logic, hypothesis, like that, research, is always imperfect. So we accept that this knowledge is 100% correct, because it's coming from the perfect authority. It's coming from Krishna himself through the hearts and minds of his pure devotees of the Lord. Now, I can give you another example, just like there is these statements where Lord Brahma, he has four heads. So we've never seen a being with four heads. And then, of course, it says he has, in other universes, there's more and more heads. So you may think, how's that understandable? But for those who are skeptics, who see everything in the, what we say, the what's the realm of length, breadth, and width, there are people even on this planet who are born with two heads. Sometimes there are people who are born with more than one arm, more than two arms. Just like I actually know of a person who has six toes on one of his foot. I saw it too. It's not like it's something unusual. I know he's a devotee, and on one foot he has six toes. Not five, six. He's also a great preacher too. So this, I'm using this as an example to show that if you find something out of the ordinary, and you can observe that this is something that is not the norm, then take that same principle and apply it in an extended way, and then you can understand that, yes, it is possible. Not only even from the logical point of view, we're using logic now, that there are people, beings with more than two arms, more than 10 heads like that, because if you can understand that there is something out of the norm on this level, then take that same principle, it applies all the way up. So that's not for the devotees, this particular example. It's for those who are skeptical about what they read in the Shastras and think it's imagination or eulogy, some kind of fantastic thing just to get people involved in reading it or excited about it. Now, actually, Bhagavatam is complete factual knowledge. It's coming from the highest source. So we have no basis to doubt anything. Our only basis is our own skepticism, which has no basis at all. But therefore, in understanding Krishna, in understanding Krishna's creation, it has to be given to us through the process of bhakti. Bhakti awakens or broadens one's consciousness and the ability to receive knowledge. As one makes advancement in Krishna consciousness, one can understand more and more about Krishna. That understanding goes beyond the theoretical concept of what we read, but comes in the form of what we say, realization. We can realize, just like, why is Bhagavatam given in a certain way, where we start off with Sarga and Visarga, creation and subcreation. And why is the 10th canto, which is Krishna's sweet pastimes in Sri Vrindavan, given much later? There's a reason for that, because unless you understand carefully that Krishna, that same Krishna in Vrindavan, who plays with cows, steals butter, steals the clothes of young girls in the place where he lives, Vrindavan, is very mischievous and does all kinds of things that look ordinary, but at the same time are not ordinary. And he's a cowherd boy. He likes to play. He likes to herd cows. So when people hear that this is the conception of God, they think, this is some kind of storyline. But that's why Bhagavatam is given to us in that same sequence, because that same Krishna is the cause of all causes. Ishvara Parma Krishna Satchitananda Vigraha Anadiranir Govinda Sarvakarna Karna. So if you want to approach Krishna in Vrindavan, first you have to have a clear understanding of Krishna being the source of all existence and creation. Otherwise, when you go people who are quite enthusiastic to skip the early parts of the Bhagavatam and go right to the 10th canto, they can't understand, because they don't understand the whole Krishna. They just take this one principle of Krishna in Vrindavan. And that's only for the self-realized souls to understand. So to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead is impossible. We can't do it. But we can get more and more of an understanding, enough understanding where we can actually serve Krishna in spontaneous attraction for Krishna. As we learn about Krishna, our attraction for him becomes more and more natural. And in that natural attraction, the service attitude increases unlimitedly. So that is the negative, but God can never be fully understood. He's so great beyond our ability to understand, upon anyone's ability to understand. He's become Lord Chaitanya just so he can get a little understanding of his own self from his pure devotee, Srimati Radharani, who is attracted to him like no one is attracted to him. Her attraction is perfect, complete, and superior to anyone. And her service to him is also. And therefore, in order to understand her love, he becomes her in the form of his mood in the incarnation or the manifestation of the Supreme Godhead in the form of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Radha Krishna Nohionya, Radharani and Krishna have become one in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, but we should try to understand God. That is our duty. And that will increase our attachment for him as we try to understand him more and more. There's different categories of how to understand him. Understand how he relates to his devotees. That's very fundamental to our own development. How much he's protecting his devotees, how much he cares for his devotees, how much he's relating to his devotees, how much he interacts with his devotees, how much he's there with the devotees 24 hours a day. That we can learn. That's very important. And of course, Krishna's pastimes were all attractive. There was one very intellectual society coming out of the country of United Kingdom, the UK. And this society was called the Mensa, M-E-N-S-A, Mensa Society. They were the topmost intellectuals within the country, and they had formed a society to discuss various types of philosophical, spiritual, practical topics. So Shamsundar Prabhu, Prabhupada's disciple, arranged for Prabhupada to meet with a group of these men in London when Prabhupada was there in 1973. So Prabhupada is talking about the greatness of Krishna. And they're listening. There's a group there. And finally, one of them asks, okay, Swami, if you say God is so great, then can he create a rock he can't lift? So it's a trick question. Can he create a rock he can't lift? And Prabhupada understood what they were trying to do. And Prabhupada said, yes, Krishna can create a rock he can't lift, and then he'll lift it. So if you say, no, he can't create a rock he can't lift, and that means he, that curtails his creative power. And if you say, if you say yes, then that curtails his, his physical power or his lifting power. Prabhupada was so intelligent amongst these intellectuals that he said, yes, he can create a rock he can't lift, and then he'll lift it. So don't try to become more smarter than the pure devotee, because he'll make you look quite silly. So, yeah. So God is great, and here is we're getting a small, insignificant, as Krishna says in the 10th chapter, this creation of the material existence, which comprises many millions of universes, is just a tiny spark of my splendor. And the material creations are 1/4 of existence. The other 3/4 are the spiritual realm. The spiritual realm is 3 times larger than the material realm. So we can't imagine what the spiritual realm is like. We can read about it in the Bhagavatam and in other scriptures like that. Right now in Mayapur, the devotees, based on the fifth canto, with thorough study of the fifth canto, there was a kind of a competition that was presented by the ISKCON leadership amongst the intellectuals in our society to come up with an explanation of Prabhupada's fifth canto that we could use as a basis for building the temple of Vedic Planetarium. And so, many people, not many, well, a good number submitted papers. And 2 devotees seemed to have it. They came into the finals. One was a lady, I don't remember her name. And then there was one devotee from Australia, his name was Antardweep. Antardweep actually got the commission because they accepted his understanding as being the most correct one and the most in line with Srila Prabhupada's fifth canto. So he was commissioned to explain it in such a way that they used that as the basis for developing the... because when you read the fifth canto, you might also get confused on what Prabhupada is actually presenting, because there are apparent contradictions in the presentations. But all contradictions are apparent on one level and are amalgamated into clear understanding on a higher level. So unless one has that intelligence, they become confused when they hear and read Srila Prabhupada's books. That's why you have to hear, and you have to hear with the explanations that are given by the acharyas. Everything should be accepted as it is, but then again, in order to understand it, we ask questions to those who can give answers. And then we get clear understanding. Like that. So the TOVV, the Temple of Vedic Planetarium, is a presentation of really the fifth canto of Srila Prabhupada's explanation. His texts are there. The texts are not Prabhupada. The texts are actually Bhagavatam, but Prabhupada gives the explanations in his Bhaktivedanta purports, which he is delineated from studying the explanations of the previous acharyas, such as Jiva Goswami, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, Sridhar Swami, and many others. And I think there is one particular acharya who really commented a lot on the fifth canto. So yeah, the fifth canto has always been a problem for, not a problem, but a source of contention amongst devotees, and particularly people who want to find fault with our movement. They look at the fifth canto and use that as an opportunity to find some fault. Prabhupada stuck to what he presented. He got challenged not only by devotees in our movement, but people on the outside also. The Prabhupada presented it. This is Krishna's creation. Okay, so we'll leave it at that and see if there's any questions.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you so much Maharaj for such wonderful pastimes of Srila Prabhupada. It gave us the idea how great God is. So thank you so much Maharaj for such a nice class. So now I will request devotees, if they have any questions, they can ask Maharaj now.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, Dhanvat Pranam. Oh, is it possible to hear me?
A little louder, please.
Give me 1 minute. Hare Krishna Maharaj, Dhanvat Pranam. Thank you so much for the wonderful class, Maharaj. Very relevant to our daily study also of the Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. So, Maharaj, I do have a lot of difficulty explaining some of the purports, even in Bhagavad Gita, where Srila Prabhupada talks about Darwinism and the theory of evolution and all that. So, when we are discussing amongst ourselves, the people whom I'm discussing with, they are actually students in biology and physics and astrophysics. So, they find it very, very hard and they are not convinced. So, and so because of that, they kind of are not able to get into the bhakti aspect of they're not able to get into the real meaning of what Srila Prabhupada is trying to explain sometimes. So how can we help?
Mm-hmm. When Prabhupada was in Russia, he had one extensive discussion with one professor, Professor Katovsky. And Professor Katovsky was a very gentlemanlike man, but he was a hardcore communist. This was in 1971, when communism was very strong in Russia. And one thing Prabhupada said that raised the eyebrows of Professor Katusky, because, you know, Prabhupada is a theist and Professor Katusky is an atheist. And, you know, so you got a theist and an atheist talking. So Prabhupada said, there's no actually no difference between what you believe and I believe. You believe in what Lenin says, and we believe in what Krishna says. So the principle is the same. We're both accepting higher authority. Professor Katasi was really amazed to hear that point, and it really struck something in him. Yes, I'm accepting Lenin, and you're accepting Krishna. What's the difference? The idea is we have to accept authority. So the people you are dealing with, they have their authority. But then again, what is the nature of that authority? Is that authority perfect? We're getting knowledge from the perfect authority, Krishna, coming down through his pure representatives, the disciplic succession. So when it comes to the facts, you'll be going back and forth. You can also try to discuss the facts, but you'll never come to any conclusion, because they'll say what they believe and you say what you believe. They have their reasonings and you have your reasonings. You go on for hundreds of years just discussing. But the principle is, what is the authority of each? So our authority is perfect, and therefore we can accept whatever comes from the perfect authority. And that's the principle. Based on that principle, we can accept anything that comes, because we know the authority is there. Krishna is perfect, and therefore whatever he says is perfect. Whatever his pure devotee also says is perfect, because it's coming from Krishna himself. So that is the basis of how to make a differentiation between what is truth and what is not truth, based on the quality of the authority. Their authority is the scientists, which are, like I mentioned in my earlier part of the discussion, their theories, their experiments, they're always changing. Nothing remains the same. And they say, yes, we're getting closer to the truth. Well, that means you're a student also. You can't be in a role of a teacher if you don't know. Teacher means one who knows. If you're teaching something, it has to be right. If you're saying, I'm teaching you this, but it may not be wrong, but it's right now. It may be wrong, but it's right now. What kind of teaching is that? No intelligent person will accept the fact that, well, you don't know now and you'll know in the future. It's like Prabhupada used to say, you owe me $1 million, you don't have the money, but you give me a post-dated check that in 20 years you can cash this check. Would any intelligent person accept the check? Well, the scientists, all their theories, ideas, experiments are all based on, you know, imperfect sentences, hypotheses, you know, empirical collections of data, which means, you know, that's why even this, amongst the scientists, they don't even agree. One studies from one angle, one studies from another angle. But we don't have that problem. Whatever Krishna says, that's it. That's the truth, and we know it. And we don't have any problem with that. So that's the basis of your discussion with these people. What is your authority? Is your authority perfect? Our authority is perfect. Well, they might say, how do you know your authority is perfect? Well, he's God. Because he's God, he's perfect. again, it's like the two ants discussing. One says there's something up there. The other one says, nah, there's nothing up there.
Thank you so much, Maharaj. Yes.
It's based on accepting the perfect authority. Is that clear?
Yes, Maharaj. Very clear. Thank you so much, Maharaj.
Oh, okay. Good. Thank you. You can use that in discussing with people who have that scientific understanding.
Yeah, so what they say is that, see, we are dealing with, I mean, one of, so. So one of them is, one of them says that, okay, we are dealing with evolution on a day-to-day basis, like molecular evolution. That is what her subject is. So she's like, how can you say that the whole theory of evolution is wrong? And we just get into an in-depth discussion, which I am totally unfamiliar with. So that's why. But this helps a lot.
Humans have evolved from apes. Well, if that's true, why isn't it not happening now? Yeah, you can. Even Darwin wrote a paper to one of his friends towards the end of his life. He said, you know, everything that I presented is simply based on my ideas for. He actually said that he's actually not even sure what he actually presented. And then if you want to take Darwin back even further, understood Darwin was commissioned by the British to do this work in order to give the superiority within the races. When they were trying to colonialize the world, they wanted to use Darwin's theory to show that they were the superior race and they were coming to give something to the rest of the world. So this was a type of, what we say, mental, or what is it? You know, this idea of superiority of race is by studying Darwin, that's what you come up with. One race is better than the other race. And that's why there's so much racism in the world today, because of that. They believe in this Darwin thing. So Darwin was given that service by the British to write this for their colonialization of the world. And he did it. He came up with these ideas. And later on he said, it's all theory. He had no factual evidence to anything. There is one book, it's called Nature's IQ. If you really want to get into seeing how Darwin is completely off, get that book. It's called Nature's IQ. It's done by two devotees in Hungary. And they put it, this book is being suppressed because actually we made a documentation on this book, a film, a full-length motion picture film, which we're trying to release in the United States, but it's not getting anywhere because the powers that be are suppressing this thing from getting out. But the documentation is also there too. I have a movie on it too, based on that. Plus the book, Nature's IQ, is the most interesting book. You can see the intelligence of, you know, the different levels of species. And based on that intelligence, you can see that actually it's each species is distinct. And not a continuation of the previous species, which is the Darwin theory. If you want this video, I can post it and so the devotees can look at it. This was more like a intro video. It's not the actual video that we wanted to release in the United States, but it was something that was made as a promo for the actual movie.
That would be great.
Huh?
That would be great.
Yeah, it would be great. Somebody can post the information on the book. The book is called Nature's IQ. It was published about 5 or 6 years ago. I can't remember the authors because I don't have the book with me here. But it's the most interesting. I read the whole book, and it's just the most amazing. Maybe you can find it. In Nature's Extraordinary Behaviors, it's all about evolution. Mm-hmm. Great book to read. Even if you don't have that kind of scientific interest, you read this book, it'll spark it.
Thank you so much for the detailed explanation, Maharaj.
Yeah.
Please share the video.
I can send the video. I have to send it to one person. So who can I send it to?
Please share with Shama Gauri Mataji. Mataji will share it with all of us.
Okay, I'll send it to Abhiram Saka. I have his email.
Thank you so much.
And also Lavanya Guru Maharaj, please, so that we can also get it, if you don't mind.
Yeah, I'll send it to Mother Lavanya.
Thank you.
I'm pretty sure it's not something you can send by email. It's usually big. I'll have to send it by Google Mail. So it may take a little time. It's really amazing when you. But I think the book's more amazing than the video. Both are interesting. Prabhupada said, yes, yes, Darwin's ancestors were definitely apes. We say, yes, Mr. Darwin, you have come from an ape. Prabhupada said, our ancestors are the great acharyas that have gone before us. These are our ancestors, not animals. Okay, any other questions?
Please accept my humble obeisances, Guru Maharaj. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. All glories to you, Guru Maharaj. My question is this. If we do come across an atheist, is there any point at all engaging in a discussion, or we should just try to not waste our time and go on to our next service?
Yeah, you waste time. If the atheist has his followers there, and it's a public discussion, then you're really giving your philosophy to the followers, because the atheist will never change. In this age, as opposed to previous ages, people don't have any, they wear their philosophy as their false ego. So even if you defeat it and it becomes obvious, they don't change. But you have to understand, it's not so easy to defeat these people because they have all their arguments. Mm-hmm. So you're wasting your time.
Okay, thank you.
What about people who are impersonal aspects, or do we? Well, yeah, you can talk to the impersonalist, because logical discussion of impersonalism will show that impersonalism is an offshoot of personalism. If you can make the connection, then it's worth it, the time, worth the discussion, right? It depends on the person, you know. If people are inquisitive, yes. If people are argumentative, then you're just going to waste your time. That's it.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, please accept my humble obeisances. Maharaj, like on theory of evolution, like I read in Prabhupada purport somewhere, so our understanding, like just correct me if I'm wrong, that our understanding of evolution is that person goes from one species to another species as we take repeated birth, and that's how we evolve to a higher consciousness species from a lower consciousness species based on our desire and our karma. So in that way, is it a right understanding that every jiva is born in a lower species when they come to this material world, and slowly they progress towards a human body, or they can come directly as a human body as well?
Well, they can. It says there's different statements, but in the lower species, there's no karma. And the point is, you have to understand all the species are there from the beginning. It's not that the species evolve from one after another. They're all there, 8,400,000 species were there at the time of creation. So the soul is going from one form of life to another until it reaches the human form of life. And when it gets to the human form of life, then it can get out of the cycle of birth and death. But in one place, it says that when the living entity falls, they fall to the position of Lord Brahma, and then they get one birth as Brahma, and then from there they fall all the way down to the very basic. And the lowest is the aquatics. From the aquatics come trees, plants, insects, and then higher up are the birds, and then the beasts, and then the humans, like that. There's five categories of living entities. So the general statement throughout the Shastra is that the living entity falls to the lowest, and then it goes natural evolution. That's why it's sinful to kill any living entity. Because if you kill a living entity in a lower species, say you step on an ant, then that soul that was in that ant body has to come back again in that ant body and live out its life as an ant, because it didn't finish its time in the ant body. So therefore, it becomes, you're interrupting its natural evolution. So therefore, it's sinful to kill any living entities. But the natural evolution is arranged by the Lord himself. So one goes from the lowest species all the way up until they get to the human species. And people come into the human species from three animal forms: from monkeys, from cows, from tigers. Out of those three forms, one can come to the human species from one of those three forms. That's the highest form of lower species of these three: tigers, monkeys, and cows. Cow is the highest.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Maharaj.
This is all part of Prabhupada's explanations. You can hear it on his lectures a lot.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Maharaj. Like, this explains why in Kali Yuga human population is increasing, because so many cows are being killed. So is that all them born as a human being?
Not necessarily, no. It's really that you can't really understand, because even Krishna, he says the workings of karma are too difficult to understand. But Krishna doesn't explain them. How a soul takes birth in another birth from a human life, where they go from human to another form. You can't really understand that, because there's so many factors that it will be available. And that's simply determined by the material energy. Material energy does that. Material energy provides the body for the next sojourn. But what birth you get next is usually what is your prominent consciousness throughout your life, which manifests at the time of death. So if you like to eat anything and everything, and you don't have any discrimination for eating, and that's been your way through your whole life, most likely you get a body of a pig. If you are, very much attuned to offending people based on what you have, then you might get a body of a dog. Dog is always barking at everybody else. They're very territorial. If you're attached to your house and you spend all the time in your house, then you can take a body next life in the same house as a mouse in the same house, you know. A human body is only given if you're worthy of a human body. So the soul can go up, the soul can go down. But if we engage in some devotional service, then we're guaranteed a human body in the next life. So to really discuss the intricacies of karma, you really, even Prabhupada doesn't touch it. Krishna says it's too difficult to understand.
Right.
I'll give you an example in the Mahabharata. This is an interesting part. Dhritarashtra, you're familiar with Dhritarashtra, the Mahabharata?
Yes, Mara.
Yeah. So Dhritarashtra, you know, he had 100 sons and they were all killed. And he was born blind. So then at the end of the battle of Kurukshetra, he approached Krishna and he said, "My dear Krishna, you know, I was born blind. I had 100 sons and they all died. Tell me my karma." Krishna said, "Well, in 50 lives ago, you were a hunter and you shot a flaming arrow into a nest of birds, and there were 100 birds in the nest and they all died. And the mother bird got away, but she was blinded by the fire." So then Dhritarashtra said, "Whoa, 50 lives ago? Why so long?" Krishna said, "Well, it took you 50 lives to get that much good karma when you could get a human birth and have 100 sons, and then your karma crashed or came, you collected your karma." Just like if you owe money and you don't have any, you can't pay it. But then as soon as the money comes, then you pay your debts. So karma is like that also.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Very well.
is it audible?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Maharaji, I wanted to ask a question. In previous classes on Mataji was explaining that if we have to please Krishna, we have to know about the likes and dislikes of Krishna. But Krishna, in chapter number 5 of Bhagavad Gita, in verse number 3, he says, Gayasya nitya sanyasi yona dvesti na kangshati nirdvandohi mahabahustham bandhat pramachyate. So in that, Krishna says, a person who neither likes or dislikes is always liberated. He is nitya sanyasi. And he is easily liberated. And we know also that Krishna is described as Nitya Sannyasi because the kind of action he does never pertains to his liking and disliking. So how are we supposed to know the likings and dislikings of Krishna so as to please him?
How do we know what Krishna likes and dislikes?
Yeah. How are we supposed to know what Krishna likes and dislikes? Given the fact that this is what Mataji said, and I was a little bit confused.
Yeah, so because that's easy to understand.
We cannot accept the fact that Krishna likes this. We may attach to our.
If you know somebody, or if you want to know somebody, you find out about that person from somebody you know. So you might ask this person, well, what is this person about? What is he like? What does he do? And you learn. So if you ask about someone who knows Krishna, they can tell you what he likes, what he doesn't like, how to serve him, how to please him. So that's our process, to approach Krishna's representative, the spiritual master, and you ask your questions. How to serve Krishna, how to please Krishna.
Thank you, Prabhuji.
Krishna is a person, but to learn about him, you learn about him from the spiritual master.
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj, please accept my humble obeisances. All glories to you, Prabhupada, and all glories to you. This kind of question has come up a few times in the very beginning of my Krishna consciousness, and I didn't know how to quite explain it. There were some, I was at that Museum of Natural History in Chicago, and there were some paleontologists. They were giving explanations of the different layers of rocks. And they were saying, well, you know, at this particular period, you only saw dinosaurs. At this particular period, you only would see birds, etc. How do you explain to them that all of the species that Krishna created all these species at the same time when you don't find like human fossils in different rock formations over the millennia all over the world?
Yeah, Prabhupada answered that. Because the Vedic culture, they don't bury the bodies, they used to burn them. Therefore, there's no, you know, they would burn the bodies and throw the bodies into the holy river. So, you know, so they just want to study bones, you know, or rocks. We study rocks and bones, you can't understand how, you know, very super intelligent people existed in the past. It's dog theory, just digging up bones and digging up rocks.
Yeah. Well, you know, and they're not just talking about human beings, but other types of species, you know, where, oh, yeah, we wouldn't see whales at this particular period. you know, in the fossils. You know, at one time the Sahara was an ocean, and there were all of these different.
It's all speculations. They're always speculating on this and speculating. Hypotheses, speculations, imperfect theories, which are always changing. Prabhupada said the dinosaurs existed. And they were at the end of the Kali Yuga. The end of the Kali Yuga becomes so bad that a species of animals come in the form of dinosaurs when people are so sinful.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Mm-hmm.
That's the end of the Kali Yuga. So that's there. But we don't accept their evidence because their means for understanding and their ability to explain things are all based on their own perfect senses. We take what Krishna says, we take the Vedic versions like that.
If you're running across people like this, though, it's very hard to explain to these types of people.
Yeah, obviously, that's their occupation. They're going to give you what they're going to give you what they're paid for. And you'll find even amongst those people within the same life, same categories, they all disagree anyway. They don't agree with each other. It's like this. It's like one comes up with a new theory like this and that. It's like one devotee was telling Prabhupada about one scientist. He said, you know, we've come up with this new theory. And in our previous theory, we didn't have any evidence that it was true. But at least in this theory, we have a little evidence that it is true. It's all, you know, if you listen to the news or the newspapers or the new, you know, you just get, you become just like them, confused.
Yeah, it's
like a child trying to catch the moon with a mirror, you know. Look, mommy, I got the moon. He's got a mirror. And he's reflecting the moon in the mirror, right? I got the moon.
Yeah, that's very true. You know, you were talking about the Mensa people. I had known someone who associated with a group of Mensa people. And she was a complete atheist. And I said, well, what, you know, she said, there has to be a reason why all of this came about. And she said, oh, no, there doesn't have to be. It could have been a complete accident.
You should tell her, yeah, you also took birth by accident. That's all.
She thought that it was just a complete coincidence that we came about. Yeah. And I,
where do you find anything that's created without a creator? Show me, give evidence where there is a creation without some intelligent form as an initiator of the creation. Even though you can't see, it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. You can't, if you turn on your light, you turn your switch on, you get light. So you might say, wow, that bulb is making light. And the bulb's not making the light. The light is coming from the powerhouse. And the powerhouse is not even doing it. The man who runs the powerhouse is making the power go out. So behind, you know, the electricity going out into form of light everywhere, there's a person. You have your computer, but you got to turn it on. You got to work it. It's a great machine. So this material energy is a great machine, but there's an operator behind it. Even from a logical point of view, they don't have any, yeah. Jhuta Karma's, book Forbidden Archaeology is a great The thing is, there is a whole group of atheists that want to destroy the idea of God, because then they can't put their theories out. They can't make their money. They can't do their scientific experiences. There was one astronaut, when he went up in space in the space shuttle, when he got so high and up, he was actually having a religious experience when he got up. When he came back, he talked about that, and that was the last thing he said. After that, they discredited him and never let him speak. There's a whole theory to destroy the presence of God within society, you know? Or to relegate God as to somebody's opinion. My opinion is God is like this. My opinion is God is like that. Who cares about your opinion? My opinion is that the sun rises in the west. Well, that's nice. But the sun will rise in the east no matter what your opinion is.
Thank you, Guru Maharaj. That helps, you know, if I'm going to explain something to somebody who's, an impersonalist. I mean, there are so many, you know, that are now, my opinion of God is, God is nature, you know, and to be able to explain to them that's just one little piece of it.
Yeah, God works through nature, but God is not nature. Nature is God's energy, that's all.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, a lot of these people, you can't argue with them because they don't have any common sense. Before you can have to understand something, you got to have some intelligence. You don't have any intelligence.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Today's session was like quite enlightening. Because I have learned many things which we don't usually read in usual textbooks from childhood, right? So I have a doubt. The scientists say that universe is expanding, ever expanding. So can we believe it, or can we infer it anything? Can we say that Krishna's energy is ever expanding and he's making many, many souls? He's creating souls.
Material energy doesn't expand. Material energy combines with other material energies to produce something else. Spiritual energy expands. So in the Bhagavatam, spiritual energy expands. But when spiritual energy contacts material energy, it looks like material energy is expanding, but it's not. It's the spiritual energy touching the material energy that makes the material energy move in certain directions and interact with other forms of material energy to create another type of material energy. That's all. Spirit, matter is dead. Matter is Jada. And matter, earth, water, fire, air, ether, it makes up these things have to be touched by something living before it can act and react or interact also. So it says the universe is 8 million miles in diameter.
So the souls are being created, the spiritual sparks, they're always being created and they're expanding. Can we infer this?
Spiritual sparks are never created. Anything that is spiritual is eternal. Spiritual means doesn't take birth, doesn't die. It exists eternally. That's God, and that's God's spiritual energy, which is the living beings, us. We are eternal. But the material energy is the energy that's made up of these five elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether. You combine these elements together in different ways, and you get different things. You get houses, you get cars, you get, you know, computers. So the spiritual energy, the living entity, touches the material energy and makes it act and interact. But without the touch of spirit, nothing moves. Just like a dead body and a live body. A dead body is a body without the spirit, and a live body is a body with the spirit. If you have a person who is alive and then they die, you find that that body, after they die, is heavier than it was when they were living, because the spirit is gone, and therefore it just becomes dead, dull matter now. Spirit is light, just like, if you take a body and you can float it on the water if there's somebody in it. When there's nobody in it, it just sinks into them. So matter is dead. There's no life to it. It doesn't move on its own. It needs the touch of spirit to move. So the spirit is never created. Spirit is always existing. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, never was a time that I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings, referring to the kings on the battlefield, nor in the future so any of us cease to be. Krishna is explaining that living beings are eternal, matter is temporary. Matter goes through changes due to its contact with material being, the soul. If the soul is in the body will grow and go through its different phases of life. As soon as the soul leaves, the body stops wherever the soul leaves and doesn't grow anymore. It's the touch of spirit that makes everything move. And spirit is not a creation. Spirit is an energy of the Lord that is eternal. As Krishna is eternal, so his spiritual energy is also eternal. Is that clear?
Yes, Maharaj. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Maharaj ji, often we see that astrologer says that it is all predestined. They can predict everything. So if they can predict everything, it is predestined. That means annually it will happen. We are going to choose something. So if we are not able to choose something, how can there be right and wrong? Because anyway, it will happen.
No, predestination is influenced by what they say is if you study a certain pattern and you understand the nature of that pattern, then it's logical that things will move in the same direction. But at any time, due to your what is called free will, you can change that pattern. Just like we were patterned to become, you know, materialists. And now we came to Krishna consciousness. So based on our free choice, we directed our life towards devotion. So this idea of predestination is simply a theory based on understanding how matter works in a certain way. But that doesn't include the principle of free will. Free will can change.
So does that mean
is your choice? So you can choose at any
Okay. Right. So does that mean that we are mechanical beings and we have patterns and that can be predicted? But when we turn into Krishna consciousness, then we have free wills, and the astrologer may not understand how how the person will be exerting his choices, because once somebody is Krishna consciousness, is in Krishna consciousness, he has choice. So out of whatever, now he's an intelligent man, and an intelligent man can do something which the astrologer cannot predict. Is that so?
Yeah, but your free choice is influenced by your karma. That's the whole thing. You have a tendency. That tendency is your karma. It's pushing you in a certain direction. Unless you make a concerted effort to change your directed direction, you'll go in the same direction. When we are not mechanical beings, we're spiritual beings. We're sentient beings. We're not mechanical at all.
Yes.
So our karma—it's karma. It's your karma that's pushing you in a certain direction to think and act in a certain way. You can change your karma by free will. But you have to understand your free will has to be stronger than your push of your karma. Because if you're just like people want to change, they have a certain habit and they want to change, but they can't change because they're being pushed in the same direction by that habit, by that karma. But if you make a stronger effort, then you can change. And that stronger effort comes by associating with those persons who you want to become like. That's why we say if you want to become a devotee, you have to associate with devotees. If you want to become a devotee and you're still associated with non-devotees, you won't become a devotee. So even your desire has to be stronger than what your karma is pushing you. And that desire has to bring about change due to association like that. Otherwise, you can't change. I'll give you an example. It's easy to understand. You're driving in your car. You're going down the highway. You come to a curve in the road, a sharp curve. So you're going 50 miles an hour. And the curve says slow to 25 miles. So in order to make the curve, you have to slow your speed down to 25 and then you can make the curve. If you continue to go 50 miles an hour and try to make that curve, there's a good chance you won't make the curve and you'll go in the same direction. So you see the point. The point is that we are being pushed in a certain direction by our material karma. And unless we have a concerted effort based on good association and strong desire, we will continue to go in the same direction we're going.
Thank you, Maharaj.
People want to change, and sometimes they change for one day or 2 days, and then they go back to doing the same thing they do again after 2 days, because their karma is stronger than their desire.
Yes, thank you very much for this wonderful class, and I am exhilarated for this wonderful discussion. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, will you allow me to ask you a question?
Yeah, who's speaking?
This is Hari Radha from Washington. Hey, okay, Hari Maharaj, Radha. My question was that I have a devotee friend, and he's a bit senior from me. And he says that once we come to Krishna consciousness, our karma changes and we become spiritualized and we do japa, harinam, sankirtan, book distribution, eat prasadam and goes on spiritual activities, and but then at the same time we do mixed devotional service where we bring in material contamination activities while watching TV, while doing japa, while driving the car, cussing at the same time, getting frustrated, and then the four illicit things Prabhupada has told us to give up, doing all those four things, but at the same time continuously also doing the Harinam Sankirtan movement and saying that all my karma that I'm doing will not be coming back to me in any other lives. Either I would get another life as a devotee in a very rich family, or but the karma that I did, including the devotional service, the bad karma that I did, including the devotional service, that karma will not touch me. And the other thing he does, that it says, is that the Prabhupada ji and God, Krishna, will decide after that where I will go, because I belong to him. And no matter what I do with my body, bad or good, spiritual or material, it is still them to decide where I will go and what I will be in my next life, if I be with them or if I not be with them. And my bad karma will not touch me. And the example you gave of this king, where he shot an arrow and he killed all the birds, and the mother of the bird flew away or something, and then he got into a karmic reactions where he had to be reborn again, and after 50 lives, and so then he had to take his karma's results. So this devotee that is saying this, is it right that he'll never ever get reactions of his karma reactions because now he has become a devotee, though he is in devotee's body, but and he still continues to give
time.
Up before. Yes, yes, of course it does. But this
time.
Person knows the entire philosophy of Krishna consciousness.
The thing is, Prabhupada said, once you come to Krishna consciousness, then you have to stop your material activities. If you continue your material activities, you'll get a reaction for that.
So this is a beautiful answer you just gave me. So this is it.
Yeah. Krishna is merciful, but still he doesn't tolerate you continuing. He says, all right, now come and engage in spiritual activities and give up your material activities. If you still engage in material activities, you'll get a reaction to those.
Thank you, Maharaj. I bow down to your lotus feet. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, please accept my humble obeisances. All glories to you, Maharaj. Very, very nice class and very nice discussion. Love the Fridays. So thank you so much. We have some questions on the chat box if you have time.
Yeah, today we're okay. We have some time. Is this Shyamagauri speaking?
Yeah, yes, Maharaj. Are you done with your lunch and everything?
Lunch is still coming up.
So are we getting late?
No, that's all right. Breakfast was a little later than usual today, so lunch can be late.
Okay.
But I need to do one thing. You can still speak. I just need to take the offering off my altar and close the deities, and then I can hear you if you keep speaking.
Okay. Yeah. So, Indu Mataji, can you read the questions? Because there are many questions on chat room. Yeah. Lalita Mataji and Dinabindu Prabhu is asking. Indu Mataji, do you want to read?
Hare Krishna Mataji.
Yeah, yes, Mataji. Can you read the questions on the chat box?
Okay. So Lalita Mataji and Dinabandhu Prabhu had asked, Dear Maharaj, how does the soul come down from rain into grain and eaten by humans relate to taking human birth from cow, tiger, and monkey? Thank you.
So what is the question?
How does the soul come down from rain into grain and eaten by human relate to taking human birth from cow, tiger, and monkey?
How does it happen? That's the arrangement of the Lord. That's how it, you know, and then it's eaten. And then when the soul enters into the grains and then you eat the grain, then when the man connects with the woman, he fertilizes the woman, and then the soul is transferred from the man to the woman. The woman provides the body. The man provides the soul. And then another birth comes. So coming from this monkey, tiger, and cow, that's a different subject matter. That's not related to that. So that's God's arrangement.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, the next question is, how can we be expected to have a balanced karmic lifestyle if we are not taught about the intricacies of karma in detail?
We have to work. As soon as you take up devotional service, then the resultant actions of your previous karma are burnt up by the power of your devotional service. You don't need to worry about how karma is working. It's being destroyed by devotional service. As long as you perform material activities, you get karma. When you perform spiritual activities, Krishna explains in the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita that devotional activities produce no karma. And not only does devotional service not produce karma, it destroys one's previous karmic reactions. So gradually, as we're engaging in devotional service, our karma is being burnt up. We're not having to get the results of our previous karma. That is the power of devotional service. That is the mercy of the Lord.
Hare Krishna Maharaji, Dandavat Pranam. Maharaji, can I ask a similar question? Because in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has mentioned various types of processes and paths for even atheistic people or people who are in between and not there completely in pure devotion and etc. So what about those people who are kind of atheistic or who are not interested in Krishna consciousness or in any other form of religious principles? So what about them? Because for them, they are at the level of karma yoga or just they have to deal with karma. So because then Krishna says that it is difficult to understand the intricacies of karma. So if we are not taught about it, how can we, where can we derive the guidance? Because even in this material world, many a times we are faced with ethical dilemmas in which we don't know which is right or which is wrong, or in a particular situation, what is right or what is wrong. So how is it possible for us to understand whether what I am doing is right or not karmically and not according to my own wish?
Yeah, thank you, ma'am. You have your scriptures. You follow the scriptures. You follow the guru. They tell you there are two things, anukulena and pratikul. Anukulena means what is favorable, and pratikul means what is unfavorable. So the scriptures explain the two categories. You have to follow what is favorable for your advancement in spiritual life and avoid what is unfavorable. Outside that, you have what is called morality, which is the basis of spirituality. And that is also mentioned in the scriptures. What are the principles of morality that leads to successful execution of spirituality?
So, Maharaj, do you mean by morality, do you mean the principles that are mentioned in Manu Samhita? Or no, where do we find...
Just take what Prabhupada has given you. He gave you everything, all in his books, his purports in Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Nectar Devotion, his lectures. Everything is there. You don't have to go outside because all the Manam Samhita depends on time, place, and circumstance. And times change. And so Prabhupada is giving us the formula for the execution of devotional service and how to do it in such a way that we will get the full benefit of our activity. It's easy. Why do we neglect the guru? The guru is the way to Krishna. He's giving not only guidance, he's giving the knowledge. That's his whole thing. Why did Prabhupada write hundreds of books? Everything is there. He wasn't trying to be a big author so he could get some acclaim for being an author. These books are for us. Everything's in his books. What to do, what not to do. Any answers, any questions you ask, Prabhupada answered it. And his lectures are in his books. It's all there. We don't have to speculate. This might be like this, or it's like this, or it's like this.
That is so true, Maharaji. But what about people who are not following Srila Prabhupada, who are not interested in Krishna consciousness? Because they also need some guidelines according to their consciousness and their levels to understand. Well,
what kind of guidance are you going to give them?
Mm-hmm. I mean, the day-to-day activities, and we always face this dilemma. Okay, whether it's this right or wrong.
Just get them to chant Hare Krishna, give them some prasadam to eat, purify their existence, and then they'll start to understand what to do. If you're trying to correct people on the little things that they do all day, you know, you'll look like somebody who's just a big fault finder. That's all. If you want to get rid of the darkness, bring in the sunlight. If you're in the midst of complete darkness and you light a match, what will that match do? Bring in the sunlight. The sunlight is the holy name. The sunlight is Krishna Prasadam, Prabhupada's books. We're not trying to make them better materialists. We're trying to bring them out of that. What is the use of going from, you know, from the mode of ignorance to the mode of passion? There's no value in that. Get them to the mode of transcendence, Krishna consciousness. It's easy. Just preach Krishna consciousness. Give them Krishna. Teach them how to chant Hare Krishna. And you can use different ways to encourage them. Everyone wants to be happy. Now, this is the formula. This is the formula for happiness. Chant Hare Krishna. Take prasadam. Learn about who you are. Learn about God. We're not trying to readjust their material life. It's not, you know, you just waste your time with that.
Thank you so much, Maharaji. And the point was very logical that we are not trying to make their material lives better. So that really clicked. Thank you very much. Dandavat Pranam. Hare Krishna.
Continue with your questions. I'm listening.
There is just one more, Maharaj, and that is also, that's from Kasturi Harini Mataji. Hare Krishna Maharaj, if practicing devotional service to Lord can reduce karmic reaction, then why does one fall after practicing it for many, many years? Mataji, would you like to unmute yourself?
Well, why does one fall? That's a number, it could be a number of reasons. One could commit offenses that can make you fall. One could be attached to keeping material desires and not willing to give up their material desires. And by that continual attachment, it'll take you back to material life again. There's many reasons why you can fall. You can fall by not understanding how to execute bhakti in the right way, and therefore not get the benefit of bhakti, although you get some benefit. You have to understand each situation individually. There's not a general answer. Some people fall because they still don't want to give up their material attachments. They still want to enjoy the material world and become, you know, God conscious at the same time. It's like trying to mix oil and water. You can go on like that for some time, but after some time, something will give. Either your material desires will take you out of Krishna consciousness, or your spiritual practice will destroy your material desires. You can't just say, well, I'm going to have this much material desires and this much Krishna consciousness. It doesn't work. Because there are two opposite energies. One is working one way, and one's working the complete opposite way. You have to go with one of them. Some people take up Krishna consciousness, but still, after some time, they go back to the material life again. And Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Manusana Sahasreshu Yasyat Yatati Kint Chittaye Yatatam Abhisithanam Kaschit Veti Mam Tatpataha. Out of many thousands of Hmong persons who take up spiritual life, hardly one knows me in truth. Hardly one actually reaches liberation, and those who are actually liberated, hardly one knows me in truth. So it's a process. It's a process. Material life is a process. Spiritual life is a process. The process also explains what is the anarthas. There are anarthas. Anarthas means unwanted things. If we keep unwanted things, just like if we cook a nice sweet rice, but we put a little bit of sand in it just to give it a crunchy, you know, texture, it'll ruin the complete taste of the sweet rice. So we're still mixing in our material desires with our spiritual practice. And if we continue to do that, despite Krishna is trying to encourage us to give it up, then after some time, you know, you'll go back to material life again.
All right, Maharaj. A very clear picture to me. Thank you, Maharaj.
Okay, Hare Krishna. Thank you, Kasturi.
Yes, Maharaj. Thank you very much.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you so much, Maharaj. Those are all the questions. I think we have covered all of them.
Okay, good. Thank you very much.
No question, we can stop, Maharaj. And thank you so much, Maharaj, for giving your precious time to us. We are so fortunate to have you on the call every Friday.
Mm-hmm. Would you like to end with some japa, or would you like to close now?
We can do one round of japa.
Okay, so we'll begin. Jai Sri Krishna, Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita Gadadhara, Sri Gaura Bhaktivinoda, Jai Sri Krishna, Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Dadhar, Sri Vasudhi Gaura Bhaktivinoda, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Yes, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram,
Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Ram, Hare Ram, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, 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 Hare Hare. Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Ram, Hare Ram, 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 Hare Hare. Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Ram, Hare Ram, 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 Hare Hare. Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Ram, Hare Ram, 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 Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Shri Krishna, Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Dvaita Gadadhar, Sri Vasudi, Gaur Bhaktivinoda, Srila Prabhupada ki
jai. Hare Krishna, thank you so much for the lovely class.
Hare Krishna, Mataji, are you there?
Yeah, thank you so much, Maharaj, for your valuable association. So now we would like to offer the obeisances to Maharaj. So Vancham Kartarubhishya Kripa Sindhu Vancham Pudita Nam Pamne Vyo Vaishya Vyo Namo Nama Anant Koti Vishramand Ki Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Granthra Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai His Holiness Chandramouli Swami Maharaj Ki Jai. Thank you so much, Maharaj.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Hare
Krishna.
Thank you,
Maharaj.
Hare Krishna to all. Hare Krishna to Maharaj.
Radhe. Radhe.